So I'm just going to continue where I left off. An old nautical map taller than he was took up half of the one wall with an ornately barred compass rose. He massaged the walls in search of light switch. There was a cane chair in one corner, but he didn't sit. All the blinds were drawn. The quality of the darkness was less than like a house with the curtains drawn, than it was like actual night, as if the sun had set or been eclipsed the moment he crossed the threshold. Quentin, slow motion, walked into the den. He'd go back outside and call in another minute. He had to at least look. The darkness was like prickling electric cloud around him. Cabinet was enormous, so big you could climb into it. He placed his hand on its small, dinged brass knob. It was unlocked. His fingers trembled. Leroy Samus, whatever. He couldn't help himself. It felt like the world was revolving around him, like his whole life had been leading up to this moment. It was a liquor cabinet. A big one. There was practically a whole bar in there. Quentin reached back past the ranks of softly jingling bottles and felt the dry, scratchy plywood at the back just to make sure. Solid. Nothing magical about it. He closed the door, his face burning in the darkness. It was when he looked around to make absolutely sure that nobody was watching that he saw the dead body on the floor. 15 minutes later, the foyer was full of people and activity. Quentin sat in a corner, in cane chair, like pallbearer at the funeral of somebody he never met. He kept the back of his skull pressed firmly against the cool, solid wall, like it was his last point of connection to the same sane reality. James stood next to him. He didn't seem to know where to put his hands. They didn't look at each other. The old man lay flat on his back on the floor. His stomach was sizable round hump, his hair crazy gray Einstein half noggin. Three paramedics crouched around him, two men and a woman. The woman was disarmingly, almost inappropriately pretty. She looked out of place in that grim scene, miscast. The paramedics were at work, but it wasn't the high-speed clinical blitz of an emergency life-saving treatment. This was the other kind, the obligatory failed resurrection. They were murmuring in low voices, packing up, ripping off patches, discarding contaminated sharps in special container. With a practice muscular movement, one of the men de-intubed the corpse. The old man's mouth was open, and Quentin could see his dead gray tongue. He smelled something that he didn't want to admit was a faint, bitter odor of shit. "This is bad," James said. "Not for the first time." "Yes," Quentin said quickly, "extremely bad." His lips and teeth felt numb. If he didn't move, nobody could involve him in this any further. He tried to breathe slowly and keep it still. He stared straight ahead, refusing to focus his eyes on what was happening in the den. He knew if he looked at James, he would only see his own mental state reflected back at him in infinite corridor of panic that led nowhere. He wondered when it would be all right for them to leave. He couldn't get rid of feeling of shame that he was one who went into the house uninvited, as if that had somehow caused the man's death. "Oh, I shouldn't have called him pedophile," Quentin said out loud. "That was wrong." "Extremely wrong," James agreed. They spoke slowly, like they were both trying out language for the first time. One of the paramedics, the woman, stood up from where she was squatting by the body. Quentin watched her stretch, heels of her hands pressed into her lumbar region, tipping her head one way, then the other. Then she walked over in their direction, stripping off rubber gloves. "Well," she announced cheerfully, "he's dead." By her accent, she was English. Quentin cleared his clotted throat. The woman chuckled the gloves nearly into the trash bin, trash from across the room. "What happened to him?" "Celebrity."